The interesting thing about that house story and a couple of other examples is the amount of time I spent in the imaginative process. The amount of time I spent in the imaginative process using that mental faculty. And I have a client I'm working with right now that is brand new to this sort of thinking technology, this way of interfacing with the world. And working with him, conveying to him the importance of this point, that really being able to vividly imagine what we would truly love is extremely important in the acceleration of it coming into the land of time and space. The better we can utilize that mental faculty of imagination, the more we can condense the time frame in which that new place that we would love to be experiencing our lives happens. Make sense? Okay. So we're talking about the power of imagination. You have six mental faculties. For those of you that have been through the Into Your Genius program, what Mary teaches, and this obviously predates that work, but she did a great version of this work with Bob Proctor. Imagination, intuition, memory, will, perception, and reason. We're focused today on imagination, but there is a piece of perception, I think, that plays a critical role in terms of how we utilize our imagination. So in working with this client, and we are working with some particular books studying, we're doing some study with Neville Goddard, Wallace Wattles, Napoleon Hill, and Dr. Maxwell Maltz. And it's been a great opportunity for me to synthesize the different ways that these four teachers discuss this particular mental faculty and to help come at this man's mindset, his perception, from different angles, looking to help him develop a relationship with the understanding of imagination's value and the important role. So in the work with him, we came to the agreement that all four of these teachers discuss three particular universal principles about imagination. The first is that the imagination can be, that's what I should have wrote up there, developed. It can be developed. As Mary used the analogy over the weekend at Dream Builder Live, watching the horses in the ranch in front of her house and the new colts and fillies, and they do not want to be tamed. But your imagination has a similar character to it, at least mine does. There is a certain type of imagination that is highly useful, and that is the creative imagination, which is very different than a synthetic imagination and or some of you have heard the story that I spent 23 years working in a company where my boss, the owner of the company, was unskillful, would be Mary's word, unskillful in how he led this organization. And I would find myself often in the shower in the morning, getting ready to go to work, and I would get in the shower, and as I'm getting ready for work, I'm arguing with him in my head. I'm having an argument with this guy in my head, particular goals, objectives that we are trying to achieve, and the results aren't where they need to be for one reason or another, and I'm arguing with him in my head. I did that for years. I would argue with this guy in my head, and one day I was talking to Mary, and I said, I just keep, how are things going? And, well, you know, this one particular relationship, you know, and I find myself arguing in the morning. She said, why don't you start imagining a different conversation? And the minute I started imagining a different conversation with him, things started to shift. And it was an amazing process. And that was one of the ways that I could use my imagination rather than it being destructive or using my imagination to terrorize myself. I started using my imagination in a creative way. It can be developed. There is a very particular type or use for your imagination that is creative. And the last universal principle that they all share, all four of these teachers, is that you can harness its power, that it can be harnessed and used as a tool for the creation of what you would love. So here are some quotes directly on how to develop the imagination. Napoleon Hill says, the creative faculty becomes more alert, more receptive to vibrations in proportion to its development through use. So literally, the more that we use our imagination, the more receptive to the vibration of what's going on it becomes. And literally, as we will end this presentation with some ways that these principles directly tie into what quantum physics is proving through the study of string theory. In today's world, we all, that is more and more understood in science, the fact that everything is vibration. All matter is vibrating. And so what I love about this particular quote by Napoleon Hill is he is saying right here that you are literally creating the reality and enhancing the vibration through your imagination. Wiles puts it this way, the more clear and definite you make your pictures, and the more you dwell upon it, the stronger your desire will be. Who has experienced that? Who'd like to share an experience? Right over here. Kelly, just tell everyone again who you are, where you're from.
Hi, my name is Kelly Olson, and I'm from Minnesota. This experience for me has created a visual in my mind that I am almost sometimes like, oh, that's not real. That's not really happening. I haven't felt that level before, but it was the repetition. And, you know, even the first time I've done it, I didn't understand the repetition, but that repetition piece really brought it into a part of me that this is truth. So that
Great.
Was very powerful.
Yeah. So, and I love your example. Some of the conversations that we've had related to that is that this actually is happening. You know, for Napoleon Hill, standing in front of the mirror, repeating the affirmation that Andrew Carnegie gave him, after a while, he started to say, wow, maybe I actually could do this. There's a shift right there in the reality that he's experiencing. You've had that? Deanna, you've had that? Okay, let's hear from Deanna real quick.
16 years ago, I had a cerebral hemorrhage that was caused by a virus. And for the last 2 years that I've worked with Mary, I kept envisioning that my brain would be clear and healthy. And in December, I had reason to have my brain scanned again. And the doctor was explaining, and it's some new technology in brain scanning. But when he looked at my brain, he said, there are shadows here. Here you can see where the virus was on your brain. But there's shadows. Those viruses, it's small now, but it was a lot bigger. And when he showed me the image of, the scan, I had already pictured this new technology that I didn't know about. I had pictured what my brain looked like and what I wanted it to look like, and I pictured the virus shrinking and dissipating. And so the reality is, the scan showed that there was evidence of this virus throughout my brain, and then there is smaller, barely still virus there. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Shrinking and shrinking as she's speaking.
Shrinking and shrinking,
shrinking
as she's
I'm speaking.
You know why? Because every day, in every way, you're getting better and better. So put yourself in this quote right here. The more clear and definite my pictures are, and the more I dwell upon those, the stronger my desire will be. One sec. Think about that. For me, one of the most difficult processes in this idea of transformation was to get the desire at the burning, boiling point. We call it a burning desire. I kind of wanted it, but it wasn't a burning desire. Water does not become steam. It doesn't transform state until it gets to 212 degrees. Matt, faced with having made the commitment, put it out there, called the Today Show. He's on the line. Everybody knows what he's doing, and he's got no RV. He's got no sponsors. But it was the culmination of that that put the water temperature at 212. Where for 10 months it was at less than that, whatever the number was. You know, are you following what I'm saying? I love this Wallace Wattles quote. So as I'm working with this guy, I'm asking him, do you really want, how bad do you want this? He's got a goal. He's got a vision he's creating for himself. Yeah, I really want it. I really want it. But his actions are not in alignment with burning desire. That's why this imagination work is so important. Because the minute you imagine it enough, where you really start to, you know, maybe I can do this, all of a sudden, things shift. Maxwell Maltz, you cannot long escape or outperform your self-image. You can dissect it, analyze it, uncover what is in it that is not true about yourself, and then alter it. And you do that through your imagination. Goddard, take the most marvelous concept you can hold of yourself and dare to assume it. Walk in the assumption as if it were true. Although at the moment your reasons deny it and your senses deny it, if you persist in it, it will harden into fact. So this idea of imagination, how often are you engaged in utilizing the mental faculty of imagination? How consistent, how sustained? What they're pointing out here is the importance of that process in your dream becoming your physical experience. Second point, creative imagination. Hill's point on this. The faculty of the mind that allows the finite mind of humankind to have direct communication with the infinite intelligence is your imagination. The portal to the infinite, the portal between you and the infinite is your imagination. Wattles. You are to create, not to compete for what is already created. This was Mary's point regarding the airline tickets, which is can be a very tricky place. You are to create, not to compete for what is already created. Bury the thought of competition. either or thinking. By the way, I'll give you these slides. Yeah, we'll give you this information, okay? A PDF version, we'll send it out to you. Tammy? Every time you guys ask, I'm like, Tammy? She sends it out. Creative imagination enters into every action we take. We act or fail to act not because of will, as is so commonly believed, but because of imagination. Goddard, everything we do unaccompanied by a change in our imagination is but futile readjustment of services. We're taking from one area and putting it into another. Unless we're using the creative imagination. Go ahead. I think we had someone. You wanted to share? Go ahead. It's okay.
Thank you. The very first Walter Waddles quote that you had up there, I lived that quote, that one. The more clear and definite you make your pictures and the more you dwell upon it, the stronger your desire will be. I lived that quote. As a lot of you know, I'm in the middle of writing a pilot. My fellow cast members are all really talented young actors who are all my daughter's best friends. And so we gather together and we've been talking about this project. And there's been a desire, certainly on my part and everybody else's part, to have this project go forward. But it wasn't until I really wrote it in word, and that led to another level of desire in me and in the kids. But then last week, they all got a copy, and we workshopped it out loud. They became the characters. They verbalized the words. They took it to that next step, all with imagining who they were, where we were, what we were wearing. And I wish you could all have been in that room. The level of desire suddenly went boom in everybody. And because of that, I keep getting texts. I can't wait. What do we do? I had this idea. Oh, this contact. I thought of this investor. And all of a sudden, they don't even realize they're sourcing ideas. And so every week we're going to get together and workshop this until, and I'm sourcing a professional writer now to help me bring it to fruition. So, you know, ears open, anybody. But I mean, that was us. That was me. That was us last week.
How about that? It was last week, and it is. You can see it even more.
It's even
now.
More now. That right. was last week, and now it's just at a whole new level, and it's going to continue to go
yeah.
that way.
So what I love about what you're saying is you get clear with this picture. All of a sudden, the creative, which is the second piece, the creative part of your imagination starts to kick in, which is, okay, oh, I can. This person can be a resource. This can be a way. This can be an idea, right? So for me, that's exactly what happened. The minute I quit focusing and imagining all the reasons why the house couldn't happen, all of the sudden, other resources started to show up. Marissa.
I think it's more just to go back to that slide, because I almost can't believe that. That the reason why we fail to act or we do act is not because of will, but because of imagination. And I would have probably sworn up and down and bet everything to say the reason why I do act or don't act is because of how I use my will. So, I mean, I don't know, John, just if you could say just a little bit more on that and how you have seen that. That is.
Yeah, so for me, if I don't have a real clear image in my mind of the goal, there just isn't the innate burning desire to do what I can do where I am with what I have, which is where the will kicks in. So when I'm highly tuned to what I would love, I'm then on the vibration of love. I'm on that, and the desire is a natural state at that point. So will is, as Mary, one of Mary's examples is this idea of being in a pool and having a
willpower.
Willpower.
Your personal willpower.
Yeah, your personal willpower is where you take a ball and you try to hold it under the water, and you can hold it under the water for a while. But there comes a point in time when you get tired. When you're doing it on your own, you get tired. The other question she gets asked is, where do you get the energy? Well, a lamp is plugged into the wall. So we never think a lamp is going to get tired. Lamps don't get tired because they're plugged in. So when you're utilizing the creative imagination and you're in that process, you are tuned into source. You are tuned into source. You're plugged in. And therefore,
say, do I need help from a higher power than my personal will? This is it. It lifts you up. It lifts you up. It flows through you. You see more. When he's talking here about will, creative imagination enters into every action we take. We act or fail to act, not because of will, as so commonly believed. You can sit here and say, I'm going to, but if you're not coming from imagination relationship with your vision, you're going to lag because you're disconnected, you're unplugged from your vision.
So let's do a piece of awareness work.
I think it's better if we don't keep asking questions right now and we let this come forth and then we talk about it.
So right now for a second, here's an awareness piece. Connect with the vibration of how you're currently in this last exercise where you were speaking your vision. How coherent is that vision in your expression? Mine's got work to do. Yeah. Right? Which is great. It's absolutely where we need to be right now. And hearing this message for me this last week and working on this was highly, highly valuable. Highly valuable. And then harnessing the imagination. How do you really harness this mental faculty? Here's Hill's perspective. The creative imagination functions only when the conscious mind is vibrating at an exceedingly rapid rate. As, for example, when the conscious mind is stimulated through the emotion of a strong desire. Waddles, behind your clear vision must be the purpose to realize it. To bring it out in tangible expression. Behind this purpose must be an invincible and unwavering faith that the thing is already yours, that it is at hand, and you only have to take possession of it. The imaginative faculty here is, it is already done. This is what Mary's way of saying this is what it looks like while it's happening. It's already done, and in its current state, this is what it looks like as it's happening, coming from the dream, not trying to get to the dream, is the principle here. Maltz, if the imagination is vivid enough and detailed enough, your imagination practice is equivalent to an actual experience. This is the imagining having a lemon, smelling it, cutting it, putting it in your mouth, and taking a big bite of lemon, and your saliva glands excrete right there. You do not know the difference between something real and something imagined. Your subconscious doesn't know. Sometimes I don't know.
Yeah, particularly vividly imagined, because if it's vividly imagined, you have enough energetic match.
And then there are literally new neural pathways that are created through that process. So your ability to be open and receptive to source. Remember, as Mary says, there's no lack of source. There's abundance is everywhere. We're swimming in it. But our ability to be aware of the opportunity can be improved and developed and harnessed so that all of a sudden we're able to see more resource. If we live in the dream thinking from it and not of it, then the creative power of imagining will answer our adventurous fancy. Let me read that line again. If we live, because a lot of us want to know, we know what, but we want to know How many times did we hear that this weekend? But Mary, I want to know how. You want to know how? This is the how. If we live in the dream, thinking from it and not of it, then the creative power of imagining will answer the adventurous fancy. She has said many times, I don't know, but I know the mind you think it up in does. Make sense? Whoops. So let's use our imagination. In 2015, we're going to be using our imagination in new ways, in enhanced ways. This mental faculty, for me, this mental faculty is what I'm going to make full use of. Are you in for that? All right, let's see what science. This is Brian Greene. How many of you have seen this video before? Oh, good. All right. We're going to do an activity in a minute. We're going to do a visual representation of what it means to utilize our imagination. Okay? This is Brian Greene. He is one of the top quantum physicists on the planet studying the unified theory of reality, currently in its form called superstring theory. And he does a phenomenal job of describing what spirituality has known for millennia in the new form of science over the last couple decades. So listen to Brian Greene. He starts with talking about Einstein and Newton and the transformation in our understanding of how the science's attempt to have a theory of how everything works. How is it all connected? How does it tie together? And the evolution of that process from Newton to today's string theory. Whoops.
The motion of apocryphal apples falling from trees, hitting people in the head, all of that could be described using Newton's work, but Einstein realized that Newton had left something out of the story, because even Newton had written that although he understood how to calculate the effect of gravity, he had been unable to figure out how it really works. How is it that the sun, 93 million miles away, somehow it affects the motion of the earth? How does the sun reach out across empty, inert space and exert influence? And that is a task to which Einstein set himself, to figure out how gravity works. And let me show you what it is that he found. So Einstein found that the medium that transmits gravity is space itself. The idea goes like this. Imagine space is a substrate of all there is. Einstein said space is nice and flat if there's no matter present. But if there is matter in the environment, such as the sun, it causes the fabric of space to warp, to curve, and that communicates the force of gravity. Even the Earth warps space around it. Now look at the moon. The moon is kept in orbit, according to these ideas, because it rolls along a valley in the curved environment that the sun and the moon and the Earth can all create by virtue of their presence. If we go to a full-frame view of this, the Earth itself is kept in orbit because it rolls along a valley in the environment that's curved because of the sun's presence. That is this new idea about how gravity actually works. Now, this idea was tested in 1919 through astronomical observations. It really works. It describes the data. And this gained Einstein prominence around the world. And that is what got Kaluza thinking. He, like Einstein, was in search of what we call a unified theory. That's one theory that might be able to describe all of nature's forces from one set of ideas, one set of principles, one master equation, if you will. So Kaluza said to himself, Einstein has been able to describe gravity in terms of warps and curves in space, in fact, space and time, to be more precise. Maybe I can play the same game with the other known force, which was at that time known as the electromagnetic force. We know of others today, but at that time, that was the only other one people were thinking about. You know, the force responsible for electricity and magnetic attraction and so forth. So Kaluza says, maybe I can play the same game and describe electromagnetic force in terms of warps and curves. In our era, A new approach to unify the laws of physics is being pursued by physicists such as myself, many others around the world. It's called superstring theory, as you were indicating. And the wonderful thing is that superstring theory has nothing to do at first sight with this idea of extra dimensions. But when we study superstring theory, we find that it resurrects the idea in a sparkling new form. So let me just tell you how that goes. Superstring theory, what is it? Well, it's a theory that tries to answer the question, what are the basic, fundamental, indivisible, uncuttable constituents making up everything in the world around us? The idea is like this. So imagine we look at a familiar object, just a candle in a holder, and imagine that we want to figure out what it is made of. So we go on a journey deep inside the object and examine the constituents. So deep inside, we all know you go sufficiently far down, you have atoms. We also all know that atoms are not the end of the story. They have little electrons that swarm around a central nucleus with neutrons and protons. Even the neutrons and protons have smaller particles inside of them, known as quarks. That is where conventional ideas stop. Here is the new idea of string theory. Deep inside any of these particles, there is something else. The something else is this dancing filament of energy. It looks like a vibrating string. That's where the idea of string theory comes from. And just like the vibrating strings that you just saw on a cello can vibrate in different patterns, these can also vibrate in different patterns. They don't produce different musical notes. Rather, they produce the different particles making up the world around us. So if these ideas are correct, this is what the ultra-microscopic landscape of the universe looks like. It's built up of a huge number of these little tiny filaments of vibrating energy, vibrating in different frequencies. The different frequencies produce the different particles. The different particles are responsible for all the richness in the world around us. And there you see unification, because matter particles, electrons and quarks, radiation particles, photons, gravitons, are all built up from one entity. So matter and the forces of nature all are put together under the rubric of vibrating strings, and that's what we mean by a unified theory. Amazing possibility. Thank you very much.
So what I love about that particular video and Brian Greene's way of describing this, the world around us is made up of these dancing filaments of energy. And what determines what type of matter they appear as is nothing more than the speed at which they're vibrating. As he said, electrons, gravitons, neutrons, all vibrating at different speeds create the brilliant world that we live in. Now, your thoughts are vibrating. Your thoughts are sending out a vibrating state. You know that if you have a piano sitting here and you play a note on a guitar, the note that you play on your guitar will automatically send that vibration out, and the string inside the piano that is in harmony with that note will automatically begin to vibrate. So as you are thinking your thoughts, you are sending out a vibratory signal to the universe. And everything that is in harmony with that thought, the vibration of that thought as it travels out into the universe, everything in harmony with that thought vibrates with that thought. And to show us a visual representation of that, do we have the exercise ready? And how do you want to conduct this, Mary? Where is the...
I want to underscore what John just said there. It is so important. It's almost scary important. If you really look at that, you know when you pick up your phone, you send out a vibration to a phone number, a specific phone number, and what stops the vibration, what connects it, is an exact match. And when we're in the shower arguing, in an imaginative state with a lot of emotion, we're generating a wavelength that, and when I say it's almost scary, because we, most of us know, I'm telling you too, how at times we indulge ourselves in things we don't want and get reactive, and how we calm that down and use our imagination. in a creative endeavor. When Neville, if you read much of Neville, and you all have The Power of Awareness, I mean, he likens, he says, the imagination is the Christ. It's the power that generates all things. When he speaks about this dancing filaments of light, unified field theory, that all things, in the Bible it says, in God, from the energy and source energy, we live and move and have our being. And God lives and moves and has being as you and me. Call it God, call it source energy, call it string theory, call it spirit, call it Buddha, call it whatever you want. But there are, it's, you all in here, you can see this, right, at least to some degree.
And we.
So when I say it's, let me say one more thing, John, because it's so, what he took us to today is so good. And he's right. As we are masterminding, brief thinking masters for this year, is that for us to bring a level of mastery to the creative powers that are endowed in us to be used in ways that produce this major initiative, this and something even better still. It's right here to be done.
So, and I appreciate what you were saying about we use it at times, and I have found myself using my imagination and less than the most productive way. And so the great news is there is a prescription. And as I was working with this client, we worked on the prescription, and he called me and said, "You wouldn't believe it. Let me tell you what's going on out of the blue." In less than a week of doing something in a consistent, sustained, repeated way. The prescription, consistent, sustained, and repeated way. So, to give us one more physical example of the opportunity for all of us as we are using this faculty of imagination, we've got an activity. Where are we going to do this activity? You want to do it right back here?
Right back here.
Okay. So, follow me.
Yeah, you can leave your things. Be sure that you're not setting it up so someone will possibly trip on what is around your chair.
All right. Let's lay that out. We want to grab the sheet. Lay it out on the floor here. All right. Everybody lay down on this. No. So what I'm going to need is some volunteers to join Matt and Jessica, and let's get as many people around it, stand as close as you can to each other, and get as many people around the sheet as possible, and let's lower the sheet down a little bit, lower it down. Yeah, so you're kind of holding it almost with your arms straight down. And it's also very important as we're doing this activity that you keep that sheet completely level. So, Ross, as the engineer in the group, can you please make sure? All right, does that look good? Okay, so we know the difference between a highly charged thought and a fleeting thought. Can someone help me out? What's the difference between a highly charged, in your own mind, what's your relationship with that idea?
I think it's all about energy, you know, when it's, I don't know, it's just what I'm projecting out. What I can feel. It's sustainability and what I can feel.
There we go, what we can feel. When we have a highly charged thought that comes with emotion versus just a fleeting thought. So, this sheet represents, you remember in Brian Greene's video, he had what he called the substrate of the universe as we know it, and it was the black grid. And then the earth, the sun, was rolling around in it and created a curvature in what is referred to as space-time. So on a very, very small scale, your thoughts... Whoops, I missed one. Now keep it completely flat so that we're not. Let me get some more of these on there. Whoop! I don't have a spot to get in there, so I can get on a chair. Someone's going to have to hand me these things. Right. Yeah, we don't want them to fall off, but we also want to keep this thing somewhat flat. Okay? So if we're thinking low-charged thoughts, yeah, if somebody else needs to get on a chair to see, I want you to be able to see this. So make sure you can see what's going on here. We also want to be safe. There we go. Okay, so as we're thinking these thoughts, super, you know, when Mary said, if a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to listen, is there a sound? Okay, Einstein and I can't remember the name of the other scientist had many debates about whether or not the moon even existed if there was not an observer there to see it. That was the level of conversation they were having. How much of this world even exists, or the universe exists at all, without the observer? So the point behind that is everything is in what's referred to as superposition. As you study quantum physics, there's something called the double slit experiment, where they fire electrons and they determine that the observer watching the experiment literally determines the result. Every result is possible. Every piece of matter, what looks physical in the world as we know it, literally is teeming with possibility. They call that superposition. So low vibrational thoughts, low use of our imagination, doesn't really have a whole lot of effect on the rest of this unified field that we are living in and swimming in and moving and having our being in. I'm going to need, can you help me? Give me those balls right there. Can you open it up and let me? So, as we start to utilize our imagination and getting our thinking, we start, try to keep them on there, but let them. What you'll notice is, let me get one right there. Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm sorry, not charged. Ones that we just think, oh, wouldn't that be nice? Let me give you an example of what I'm referring to. Oh, I really would love to have my dream. Wouldn't that be nice if that happened? You know, it's out there. The thinking that it's out there somewhere, not something that it's happening in this moment. I'm not coming from my dream. It's some desire that is outside of me. Hoping and wishing. There we go. Great example. Whoops. Great examples. Now this, we're having a hard time getting this thing completely flat, but good work. There we go. As we start to work on a vision, and the vision becomes clear, and on a daily basis, we're imagining this life, all of a sudden, our thoughts are more highly charged, and things start to shift. Look at that. Let the smaller balls at this point represent resource, opportunity. All of a sudden, the contact that we needed, the conversation. We run into somebody and they say, are these things work? Is this working? A little bit. Oh, it's all kind of right in the middle. Yeah. No, and it isn't exactly flat, but let me just say what would happen if it were. You can imagine what's happening and you can see some of it. What happens is, the smaller balls now, which no longer represent a fleeting thought or a thought that isn't highly charged, but instead represent a connection with another person or someone that can help us out. The man driving up the street, when it's not highly charged, he's not stopping. He's not feeling called to stop and pull over and come talk to me. He just drives right on by. We start to work on our vision. We're utilizing our imagination. We're walking around and it's starting to come together. All of a sudden, some connections start happening. And if this were completely flat, what you'd see is that those softballs are able to attract to it stuff that is fairly close around it. In other words, that thinking has somewhat of a perimeter of attraction, and it's able to reach out, and all of a sudden someone in another room or someone, you know, a friend of a friend says, hey, are you, do you know anybody working on this? And there is this vibration that is expanding. And when we continue to work on it in a sustained way with consistency, and that vibration builds, it's an accumulative process that gets us, not anyone else out there, but it gets us to a place where we say, this is happening. And we really feel it in our bones. This is happening. Now watch out. Let me get this. Hold on. All the resources that are needed to bring that vision into the land of reality, and all the resources are attracted, and they are attracted in a nanosecond. It can happen like that. So use your imagination. Thank you.
Come back up.
Yeah. So let me just say one more thing about this idea of superposition.
Would you and Kirsten be willing to pass these out?
Okay. Come on back to your seats, because I want you to ground one piece of this. Okay? You've all heard Mary tell the story of her work with Jack Boland. And even after working with Jack Boland for a number of years, at one point he says, what are you working on now? And she says, a 10-year plan. And instead of 10 years, that plan took 10 months. Numbers of you have had experiences where you said, I want to move to California. It's going to be difficult. I'm going to create this easy breezy instead. Here's the interesting thing. This is one of the things that I absolutely love about Brian Greene's work and the impact that it's made on me. If you think about space-time and its ability to curve and warp, if you are standing in one place and you are looking linearly across the space-time, and we're going to use this room as an example. If I'm looking from here to that back wall, and my goal is to get from here to that back wall, and I can see the goal in mind. From right here, I can tell about how many steps it's going to take to get from here to there. Right? Maybe 200 steps from here to the back of the wall. But here's what's interesting. The way that space-time works, the fact that it is pliable, that it is moldable, is the minute I start taking a step toward that back wall, I start creating this gravitational pull. I start bending space-time. And all of a sudden, that wall is moving closer to me through the bending and warping of space-time. And the more that I am in high vibration thinking, the more that I am holding the reality, this is happening, the more that it warps and it can literally collapse space and time. Your vision, your goal, your dream that currently from your current position looks like it's going to take 5 years really is going to take 5 years from your current position. But as you move, you are going to collapse space and time. So again, it isn't that you're not what you're imagining right now in terms of time, time is an illusion. It really does look like a five-year vision. Start moving. And 10 years becomes 10 months. 3 years becomes 6 months. Literally, as you take the steps in the direction of your dream. Are we handing out the, did you want to hand
yes,
out the?
Yes, we are. We have it ready to go.
Okay. So we want to give you a prescription on really how to take full use and command, how to harness the theater of the mind. Napoleon Hill called it the workshop of the mind. But they all understood, all four of those writers understood the absolute divine power that you possess through the mental faculty of your intuition. Excuse me, imagination. Okay? I don't have one up here. Is there? Okay. Okay. So this comes from Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, where he describes the theater of the mind. And this is what I've been utilizing with my client. And what's great is, here's what I love. It doesn't matter that he doesn't believe this stuff or that he came in thinking it was hocus pocus. It doesn't matter that he's skeptical the way that I was skeptical. What matters is he willing? You heard my story the other day. What I had when I arrived above and beyond that was worth far more than $7 in my pocket and a car that I was 9 months behind on the payments for, what mattered was I was willing. So are you willing this year to up your use of the mental faculty we call your imagination? Then here's the prescription. Step one, take pad and pen and write out a brief outline or description of the mental movie you intend to construct. Now, here's the good news. You've already done that. You've been doing it, and you will continue to do that. That's your vision. Experiment with, develop, and view in the theater of the mind. And you've been doing that all weekend long. Step two, set aside 30 minutes a day, preferably at the same time each day, to find a quiet, private place. Relax. Close your eyes. Enter your theater and begin playing, editing, replaying your movie, your vision. Step three, gradually massage your movie so that its star, you, performs exactly as you desire and achieves the experience and result you desire. Strive to arrive at this point within the first 10 days. So what I'm in the middle of working on with this client is coming to a place where he says, I absolutely love my vision. I'm there. For me, it was that last meeting with the architect where I went in and we looked at the plans. And I'd been going every day to my piece of land and imagining it there. And as we wrote it out on the first, it was napkins and regular pieces of paper. And I spent all of that time massaging my vision. And I got right to a point where I was ready to settle. And then made that last adjustment so that I was really standing in a place that I loved. So this is so perfect. Strive to arrive at this point. In his prescription here, it's within 10 days. And then step four, for the remaining 11 days, this is a 21-day process. Play and enjoy that movie repeatedly without change. This work will pay massive dividends. Mary has you working on it all year. But for me, I know when we talk about vision calibration, which you all have the opportunity of working with Kirsten on. Kirsten is our master coach. Kirsten's helped me with my vision. And it is sometimes the smallest change in wording and in vibration that makes the biggest impact. And she is a master at this. Absolutely make sure that your vision has been calibrated by a master coach. I'm forever grateful, Kirsten, for your work with me and with my wife, with Dora. Our vision of what it will be like to live in the U.S. My wife's Mexican, grew up in La Paz, lived almost her entire adult life in Cabo San Lucas. And she loves the States, loves the culture, and the opportunity to move up here was directly at her core in alignment with the most important core values that we have. But when we got up here in last July, there was a big part of her that was shaken. Through the building of this new dream, there was a part of her that was shaken. There were things she had to be willing to let go of, things that were comfortable. And it was painful. It was painful. There were parts of this process that were painful for her. And we worked on, you know, how are we going to, I miss my family. You know, I want this experience for my children. And right now, for the next 4 years, this is more important to me. But at the same time, I still miss my family. I miss my favorite taco stand. I miss the beach in Cabo. I miss, you know, so creating experience, holding a vision. First, creating a clear vision of why we're doing what we're doing. Why is this important? And how would that be evidenced? What would we see that would make it clear to us that what we're doing really has the value that we're looking to create? The experience, the emotion, the feeling, the pictures. And day before yesterday, when our daughters, my wife was here this weekend, and my daughters were taking their entrance exams for high school on Saturday morning, and then they drove up here and joined us in the afternoon. And when my wife and I at one of the breaks were talking with some people, and my daughters ran into the room and hugged me. And I have one daughter who the last couple of years, she's 14, and you know, she's just going through that. She's no longer my little girl. She's becoming a young woman, and she physically hasn't really been that close to me. It's kind of, you know, Dad, you know, I think she's feeling in that awkward, you know, physical place. She literally ran into the room, almost tackled me, looked up to me and said, "Hi, Daddy." And my wife was right there, saw this. And then in the afternoon, they were on stage dancing with Uncle Matt. I sent them to Cabo San Lucas for New Year's to go visit all their friends. I brought my wife's mother up to be with us for 6 weeks. I'm doing all that I can do to help bring this vision into the land of space and time in a way where we really do love it. When the girls came home from spending New Year's with all their friends in Cabo and what they've missed, we asked them, if you had an opportunity right now, if you say you want to move back to Cabo or you want to stay here, what would you choose? "Oh, Daddy, it was so fun to see our friends, but we are so happy here." And Dora drove home last night. She took the girls. She went back to, because they're in school today. And when I went up to my room, we got all done with Dream Builder Live. And we had our little company dinner last night and celebrated the phenomenal work you did all weekend. And especially this group, holding state and energy for the possibility for the dreams that were in that room over the weekend, and holding that group in that state of positive. We were very grateful for this group and helping. It's not something we can do on our own. And I got back up to my room at 11:30 last night. There was a note on my pillow, and the note said, "Thank you for helping to create our dream life in the United States." It starts with your imagination. Use this prescription, and your dream will be your reality. Thank you.